This is like something really, really special. Howard, thank you so much for being in my show, first
my
of all.
My honor.
It's really, really thrilling to have you here. You look so much younger than I thought you would be. Is that a bad thing to say?
Well, actually, that's a result of this material.
It is, huh?
Yeah.
You're so stylish and, you know, like very young. And I was like, I was expecting, you know, a 70-year-old man, like really crooked. And no, I saw he was like, wow, he's really young and very active.
Thank
and
you.
And you're a little bit tan, too.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being here on my show. And I want to explain a little bit like that. The audience understands a little bit about you. Howard has been a practicing psychologist for over 40 years. It's a long time. He has taught at the University of California and the California Institute of Integral Studies, as well as at Sonoma State University, the University of San Francisco, and Esalen Institute. His publications include several articles in magazines such as Parabola, San Francisco Jung Institute Journal, and how do you say this? Chrysalis, and the Noetic Science Review. His work also has been included in many anthologies, among the Mirrors of the Self, a use of comparative mythological essays on the work of Joseph Campbell. Is that exactly how I said it right?
Yes, important person.
Wow, I know. Who is this person? Tell me, because
it's amazing to me that most people now have not heard of Joseph Campbell, who was really made famous by Bill Moyer, who was the inspiration for the mythology of Star Wars. And so in the last part of his life, he got very well recognized and had been writing about world mythology for 30 or 40 years, and is, from my perspective, has still got the most interesting material of collecting the stories of humanness and how different cultures are different and cross-culturally the same.
Okay.
So he's a huge person, and he wrote a very famous book called The Hero with a Thousand Faces that many people are still reading. And his real secret work was something that very few people read called Where the Two Come to Their Father.
Which
most people haven't. And it's actually an article on my website about the twin heroes in psychology, which was the big mystery that changed my life. And my book is about this particular story of the twin heroes and how the hero with a thousand faces had made me, as you said, a 70-year-old person growing up in the 50s and the 60s, thinking that masculinity was one dimension of reality. And to find out there was actually another part of masculinity that in Western culture had been repressed and has been mistakenly called the feminine side of men and is really the ancient male moon god. And so you have the sun hero and the moon hero, and Campbell wrote about this in the Navajo mythology, and that really changed my life and was really the beginning of this book.
Beginning of your journey towards
Being out of the title of your show, it took me out of being lost in transition and helped me now just be in transition and not as lost.
So you think that people should go through a period of time that they should be lost in transition? We were just talking about that.
Well, people are, whether they admit it or not, and it's really about being able to surrender their belief system that they know what's going on, to be willing to listen to the great mysteries inside themselves and listen to others to find out how to find reality.
But do you think that it applies for everybody? Like, I believe that there's old souls and there's people that come to this life and they just don't have, major problems and they have it, like, together. Do you believe in that?
I certainly believe in the archetypal structure of reality, the ancient wisdom that's born within everybody, and people make different access to it at different points in life. And so my work is mostly about creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are interested in being creative, whether it's in their personal relationship or their work life, and the world today almost demands it.
Yes, of course it does.
So to learn how to be creative in mindset and attitude is really how one finds how to make different transition points that happen, whether we like it or not.
Of course. Okay, so I read your book, not all of it, as I told you, because I'm really short in time, but I think I read what struck me the most and what I like the most of the book so far. Your personal life, Howard, it's crazy. I mean, your mother's suicide, and then your brother after 10 years or something like that. I don't remember the date.
Right.
10 years, your brother's suicide, too.
Right.
And before all this happened, you were a person that was under depression.
Well, I didn't realize it. I, being a person who grew up in the 50s and 50s particularly, the program was go to school, get a degree, get married, and have a child, which I did. And then in my late 20s, I realized something was missing and basically went into therapy and had a master's in psych, a master's in business and a minor in psych, and decided to become a psychologist, and really opened up to the transition in me. And I had no idea what being a psychologist was about or what it would really be. So that I was really lost, and the suicide made me realize I'd been depressed. I hadn't even been aware I'd been depressed.
Oh, you weren't even aware that you were depressed?
No.
I didn't notice that, but it's really funny because I came across to not understand one thing of your book when I read it. You said that you were a depressed person, or you were not okay, let's say happy, but at the same time, you were working as a psychologist, and you were helping people, and you were being very successful in your career.
I was high functioning. As many
what does
people,
this mean?
Well, I was very successful economically, even in relationships.
And helping people, too.
Helping people a lot, and ended up having to just keep looking at myself, because when you're working with people, you can't help somebody if you haven't really worked out that part of yourself. And I had no idea there were so many parts of myself to work out. And still, I'm working on the hardest thing in life is the evolution of how to be in intimate relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lifetime journey. And I had no idea that there were so many pieces that I had to look at. And I've discovered that it's not just me, almost everybody has this dynamic. And really, the only reason that people really go into therapy is to work on intimate relationships, as it turns out. It's about relationships.
It's about relationships.
And how one relates to themselves and others.
Mm-hmm. So now, sorry to interrupt you, but I'm stuck in this thing of, like, you were very successful, which this means you were helping a lot of people with their personal intimate relationships.
Yeah.
How does a psychologist, and this has always, like, hunted me all my life, how does a psychologist is successful and can help other people when he's going through the same issues himself?
Well, first of all, to really be a psychologist with integrity, one has to be in analysis and therapy. So once I started in my late 20s, I'm still work on myself in my own therapy with therapists, and many, many teachers of mine have been many therapists that I've transitioned. So one has to work on themselves, but the most embarrassing thing at the beginning of being a therapist is how you realize when you're listening to somebody that you have the same issue that they do. And hopefully you've worked on that issue with yourself, and all of a sudden you work it out yourself, and then you see almost everybody in your practice change the next day. It's very humbling to commit yourself to keep evolving, because if you're going to be passionate about it, which I really am, and many therapists are passionate, that means you have to keep transitioning yourself, even though you don't even know where you're stuck. And so you have to be willing to really admit what I call the shadow, the part of you that's not working. And the most helpful way and the horrible way to do it is to listen to others tell you about where it is that you're stuck. And then you have to really let go of your belief system that you have it together, and really humbly listen and take responsibility and then do something about it. And if one does that, therapist or not, it's about people. And if one does that in any relationship, you change, the relationship changes and how people respond to you. So to me, being a therapist is just being a person. And being a therapist.
But you're helping these people, ultimately.
Well, you help your partners in relationships. Almost everybody helps everybody.
Yeah.
It just depends on how much you can really see yourself and work through your own stuff to helpfully be more effective with others.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Now, you said that you were not conscious when you were depressed. You weren't aware that you even were depressed.
Well, I began to be aware of it as I really got into my own therapy and began to see what was in my way. And I began to really see how stuck I was. And then I kept seeing how stuck I was.
With the people that as mirrors, you mean,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and therapists that I had.
Oh, therapists that you would go to therapy.
I've had the world's best. San Francisco and the Bay Area has some of the absolute world's best. And I've always picked the top people.
Okay.
So I've been very honored to be with masters, men and women, who know how to help give people information. And it's about reflections and being willing to look at the mirror and not see your own self-centeredness, but see what's really there.
Now, by your book, I read that you would go to a lot of therapists and change and this and that and medication, but nothing would really help.
Well, I had the best therapists there were, and I was still stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually not a very well-known movie anymore, but movies are how you find out about mythology these days. People don't read about mythology, and I never did. I was never interested in mythology. But I saw the movie The Kiss of the Spider-Woman, which was an Academy Award-winning movie, and I wondered who Spider-Woman was in the title because it was unclear. And a friend of mine had written about Navajo mythology, and I remembered she was a figure in Navajo mythology, and that's what really tuned me into the layer of Joseph Campbell's work, because he had written about where the twins come to their father in the earliest thing he had written. And that was a wake-up call eventually for me to understand what twins meant in a male psyche as opposed to the hero with a thousand faces, which is what most people have been educated and believe. So it was really through movies that I really opened up to this whole world that I've eventually looked at and researched at a very deep level.
So this is what triggered all this?
It triggered the liberation was the movie. I was sitting in a movie on the Clay Theater on Fillmore Street after having worked, and I was unhappy. And I saw this movie, and I saw it was about two men who were in a prison in South America, and they each ended up dying the other one's death. And I wondered if they would have become conscious in their life that there was a part of the other that was in themselves, would that have made a difference? And I wondered who Spider-Woman was in the title, because it was not clear. And it was from that intuition to find out who Spider-Woman was that this whole other world opened up for me that has really created the transition and the phenomenal life I have at multiple levels right now.
Okay. Yeah. So before we jump to Solar Light, Lunar Light, which is the book that you wrote, and it's fabulous, I want to ask you this, and it's the last personal question about your life. When your mother suicided, and then after 10 years your brother, did this increase more your depression? Did this make you just do something about it? Or
My mother's suicide came right when I had started back to become a therapist.
Wow.
So it really woke me up to my background and how depressed my childhood was, because I didn't know that. So that woke me up. When my brother committed suicide 10 years later, to be honest with you, I was relieved because of the level of suffering I knew he was under, and he was... I've had to accept that suicide is one way that people have always died, and not to be in all the social prejudices about it. But at that moment, I committed myself to really be humble and try to make sure every moment of my life I was awake and alive at another level. So it was a very humbling experience for me, even though I had made many changes by that time. But it was, of course, a major wake-up call, as was my mother's suicide, as is any death. In any family, it takes you into a wake up.
It does, but a suicide, it's a little bit probably different than somebody that just dies
mostly
of a disease. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, it's the same, because a disease is like a way of...
It definitely, at one point, everybody in my practice was suicidal, of course. And I had to really work out how to help others pass that point. And now hardly anybody ever is. So what you work out as a therapist tends to be what you attract.
Yes.
Or what you haven't worked out is what you end up attracting to work out. Not just for in a self-centered way, but to be able to help others. Because there's a humanness that cuts across gender and cuts across age that you get a chance to really look at and experience.
Okay. Now, before we jump into the questions of the book, which I loved, Solar Light, Lunar Light, Perspectives in Human Consciousness. Can you do a brief summary? What is this book about, like that people can understand it?
Well, I think the biggest thing that realized was that I still hear it today that to be fully developed, a man has to develop his feminine side and a woman has to develop her masculine side. And that's kind of the cutting edge thinking. Having grown up in San Francisco, I did that more than most people will in most parts of the world.
Yes.
And something was still missing. And what I realized through this movie was that there was this other structure in the male psyche that every single culture has had male twins in its birth cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And Western culture, Romulus kills Remus.
Yes.
And one of the twins that gets killed is the lunar masculine twin that has been confused with the feminine because it has been unfortunately associated with homosexuality and gender issues rather than
sensitivity,
emotional integrity, creativity. And as it turns out, the male archetype, whether it's in men or whether it's in women, is actually the first instinct for consciousness. The moon was ultimately used 30,000 years ago because it was a transition. Every moment it changed, people started carving it into rocks. They began to see the cycles of nature, and it had nothing to do with gender. It's only cultures that have genderized this. And to liberate oneself from the belief, because if you believe that one thing is genetic, it's your gender. And when you realize that it's the culture that's created the issues, not nature, and you go back to the architecture of nature and liberate that within your own gender, and you find, as I did, that there was a lunar masculine and a solar masculine, and for women there's a lunar feminine and a solar feminine, and that it's about getting in touch with these two dynamic energies within yourself, within your own gender. It makes a big difference if you realize it's something that's genetic, as opposed to, as I found out eventually, it was a cultural bias for power in politics. And
right.
There are certain reasons, and if you are, most of the people I know are really don't want to have intimate peer relationships, and if you don't realize that part of the energy that you have inside you that you haven't claimed is within your own gender, it really makes it accessible on a very conscious level for the men to really consciously develop emotional integrity as a male instinct for a man, just as emotional integrity is a female instinct for women. And if you realize that it's part of being human, not your gender, it makes it much more likely that in the heat of reality, you're going to call forth those parts of yourself and bring them forward to evolve, as opposed to being stuck in a belief system that is really a false belief system. So the big change in me was getting out of the false belief system of Western culture's gender stamping, and opening up to these are archetypal energies in quantum physics, which is one of the more interesting models of reality. The solar is the particle and the lunar is the wave. And understanding, as I go into a chapter in the book, how the wave and the particle are complementary, not opposites, but complementary. They're both and. And one learns how to work both and rather than an either or thinking, rather than a black and white thinking, one has a chance to have a different kind of dialogue, different dialogue in relationships.
Right.
And that's where it really comes down to, whether it's work relationship or personal relationship. If you don't get caught in the power struggle and are willing to surrender your belief in the moment to listen to the other and have empathy, which is a huge neurological learning dynamic that actually creates a different chemistry in the psyche, and you're really willing to let go of the inflated ego's belief that you know something and you're open to listen to the other.
Yes, but let me interrupt you one second.
Please.
I agree completely with everything that you're saying, and it's just fantastic that you're mentioning all this in my show, but don't you think that we live in a planet where we're very solar-centered and very ego-centered, and the masculine, I would say. It's not masculine. The solar side, it's so strong, because I see it in everywhere.
Well, it's dominated.
It's dominated,
exactly. It's totally
exactly.
created a crisis, in not only in individuals, but in the global level, that if one is really caught in an inflated solar belief system, there isn't room for the integrity of the lunar to
exactly.
live with inside. And it's the complementarity and the symmetry of both and that really makes a difference on an individual life as well as on a global life. But you're absolutely right. One of the actual truthful false beliefs is that the belief is men are solar and women are lunar. If you look at most relationships, women are oftentimes much more solar than the men.
Depends where, darling. In Argentina, does it work like that? But
yes.
No, but I agree.
And so it's a matter of even cultural biases, like in Argentina. There are places like the tango where you see the leader and the follower. And these days in the Bay Area, which I've tried to learn tango, am learning it, I should say, you see many women being, quote, leaders, and many men learning the follower position or the solar and the lunar and really get past
these gender stampings.
For the individual evolution of energy.
Of energy.
Because we're about energy.
That we're about energy. So let me interrupt you one second,
please.
Howard. Unfortunately, we have to go to a break. This is Lost Interested in TRadioV.com, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking off the air with Howard about the inflated solar ego, because I was saying that in the planet that we live in, there's a lot of solar ego, you know, predominant energy or whatever you want to call it. So he's saying, well, it depends. There's the inflated solar ego and the authentic solar ego. Can you explain this?
Yeah, it's like the authentic solar ego is the ability to be healthily competitive, to be analytical, to be decisive, strong, active. But it's when the inflatedness, when that's all you think there is, and all you are is strong, all you are is decisive, or there's something wrong with you if you have any questions about reality because you're not decisive enough or you're not strong enough. You feel socially and low self-esteem. Most self-esteem comes from an inflated solar dynamic that you're not measuring up to some idealized fantasy. And so you know it inside, so you feel low self-esteem inside, not because you have low self-esteem, but because you have an inflated belief where the culture believes that you ought to be a certain way, and if you don't match it, there's something wounded or wrong with you or weak. And the issue is the inflated solar addiction rather than the authentic solar inside. And I think it's pretty obvious in the story of my book, even though I've been outrageously successful, I still had low self-esteem until I realized that it was because I had these unconscious idealized expectations of how I should be. So I was, quote, never good enough. And so I knew that inside. And until I got out of the inflated solar expectations and really was able to listen to the authentic solar, I saw, wow, I feel as good as I'm doing because I did better than I felt.
Wow.
And one of the most interesting chapters in the book is actually the last chapter, the workbook, which
I
has
didn't
six,
get to that one.
Yeah, well, it has six steps. I'll go through it very quickly. That I found these six steps to be the huge thing that I use and teach. The first step is, first of all, to be aware that there's something negative. The second step, and that's most people know that, but they don't know what to do about it.
Yep.
The second step is to ask what the expectation is or the idealization that goes along with that negative feeling. And amazing, the unconscious inside of almost everybody will tell them what the unconscious expectation is. The third step is take that expectation and turn it into an image or a picture in your mind or an intuition, because the mind codes in pictures, not words. So if you visualize what that expectation is, and I like putting it in a balloon and popping the balloon, or image throwing it in a fire, this inflated expectation. And if you listen to the next thing that comes up, it's your authentic intuition. And the intuition is the wisdom of the unconscious and the conscious mind. So the fourth step is to grabbing right away the first intuition. The fifth step is to do something about it. Write it down, say it out loud, call somebody, type an email about it, or choose not to do something about it, because the fifth step's an important step, which is to embody the thought so that you don't have a mind-body split. And the sixth step is do anything you can to not have expectations and idealizations. And then when you do, because we don't know we do, because they're so deeply programmed into us in the solar model that education and expectations are built around, notice a negative feeling, ask your unconscious, step two, what it is that you're feeling negative about, image throwing it in the fire, image popping it in a balloon, listen to your intuition right away, do something about it, and you can be pretty free, pretty quickly from this unconscious programming of inflated solar reality. And what it accesses is the lunar freedom. And the great secret of most mysticism is the lunar leads and the solar executes. We've been taught the solar
takes
action.
Exactly.
But really, if you listen to
your intuition
and take action on that, you get to live in emotional integrity. That really ends up resolving most low self-esteem issues.
So the low self-esteem is obviously based in the ego. It's not the spirit or the soul.
It's the inflated solar ego that we've all been taught is the single hero. And if you realize there really are these two brains, these two parts of us, one is alpha brain waves, one is beta brain waves, and if you realize that having psychological agility to get out of the over-identification of the solar ego with the expectation, you get to have psychological agility, and there's a different chemistry that goes on. Adrenaline comes with the ego. Serotonin, the energy of bonding and relationships comes with the lunar. So I'm a person that believes in...
Serotonin comes with the lunar?
Yeah, it's amazing if you give empathy to another, which is to basically surrender your ego from its attachment to its belief, take the seed of truth of the other, and use their metaphor. If you say something and I say, well, no, it's not. And if I go back and say, would you please repeat that? And you said you're wearing a green dress. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's black. And you believe it's green, unless I can have empathy to see the seed of truth or more, in your reality, I'm going to be off in my own self-centered fantasy of, well, no, you're wrong and I'm right. But when I give you empathy to see how you'd see it, the world that way, the chemistry changes in the mind, and one gets to be high from serotonin, which is the chemistry of love and the chemistry that mothers have when they're birthing a child, and accessing the lunar, not instead of the solar, but as a both and, so that you get the right amount of adrenaline, not the hypoadrenaline, and you get the right amount of the serotonin. Having the psychological agility to use the solar lunar consciousness actually gives you the experience of changing your chemistry, which is amazing. One just gives empathy in life. One has a different chemical experience and a different emotional experience.
Wow. It's a lot. I'm going to have to watch this show. I have it linked up. I'm going to have to watch it over and over, and I hope everybody else does, because it's so much information that, I mean, I'm understanding everything, but it's a lot to process because it's intense.
For the ego to not be lost in transition and be willing to surrender its beliefs, to listen to something different, not that this is, quote, right, and what somebody else believes is wrong.
No.
But it's another perspective.
Another perspective.
And to take it in, it's a paradigm shift. And the paradigm shift has its own life if one gets out of their expectations and idealizations.
Right. Let me jump to one of the questions that you stated in the book. It is as simple as recognizing that men and women are both warriors and lovers by nature's design, not by cultural gender labels. We are primarily cellular systems that are part of nature's web of living systems that are influenced by nature's forces like the sun, moon, and the cosmos. This said, why are we humans so unbalanced then regarding our feminine and masculine sides?
We've been basically dogmatically brainwashed. All pre-Judeo-Christian cultures and indigenous cultures today have the solar lunar in both genders. They have the solar masculine and the lunar masculine, the lunar feminine and the solar feminine. Western culture says solar is male, lunar is female. And it's that belief system that dominates education, parental training, and what we're taught. And so for the last 2,000 years, we've been basically dogmatically brainwashed to live in mind rather than nature. And using these images of the sun and the moon, or these energies, or these metaphors, actually brings you back to your authentic nature and the nature of being human, which is not imbalanced.
Which is not imbalanced. Nature is not imbalanced.
Exactly. It turns out that cooperation is as big, if not bigger, principle than competition. Mm-hmm. And Darwin was a solar thinker.
He was a solar thinker, and I agree.
Most of the things we've been trained have been brainwashed is that's reality, and something that doesn't fit the solar is false. And it's a matter of both end. If you scratch the surface and look at the literature, you'll see there's a solar voice and there's a lunar voice. There was a guy named Wallace that was Darwin's twin and essentially had the lunar point of view. And all the stuff that got birthed in the 70s and the 80s about the Gaia principle and many of the things that have formed modern consciousness are really the lunar cannot be killed by gender. It will come back. It's whether how consciously and quickly we can bring back our authentic nature.
But I don't think I see that there's a shift in the planet, but I don't see that it's going fast enough to not self-destroy ourselves.
I think that is the great challenge, is by doing these six steps or some version of it, you can quickly change your experience of reality, and it's going to set up a different mindset towards what you're interested in, how you have loving relationships and loving relationships to others. Mm-hmm. Because we're about relationships. We're mammals. And we've really forgotten it's about relationships, because we've been taught that the solar hero is the one to be, and you're weak if you care about others. There's something wrong with you.
Yeah, or you're too sensitive or vulnerable or whatever.
All the different put-downs. But the truth is that we're both and. We have both these sides, and to bring them back, and I've seen this happen in companies I work with. I do a lot of consulting in organizations or individual work I do with people or group work to bring back the symmetry of both and really can speed up, I think, the crisis that will end up dominating unless we do something radical. People talk about we need a different mindset. From my experience, this is nature's mindset. It's the logic of nature. And to understand the logic of nature as complementarity, you mentioned the yin-yang. What most people, when I talk about the solar lunar, they say, oh yeah, that the yang, that's masculine, and the yin, that's feminine. What isn't realized is that's a cultural gender stamp that was put on by Confucius. The Taoists before Confucius had the solar as light and the lunar as shade. And there were two different modes of consciousness. It had nothing to do with gender. To really be liberated from the gender distortions that we've been taught and to go back to these authentic biological energies and include them as consciousness makes a radical difference quickly, to your point. You can do this quickly if you have the courage to surrender your ego's attachment to your solar belief systems. As I said in the book, my wake-up call was that I had to develop my solar side, not my lunar side. And that most men I know have to work on their solar side. Because it's the authentic
solar. On their lunar side, you mean?
Men hide their lunar side because it's not okay to be emotional. It's not okay to have intuition. So they detach from it. When I came across, oh my God, I'm really lunar, and that my woundedness from growing up in the 60s where I saw what being masculine was about was murdering and killing and being competitive, I hid that part of me. And when I came across this material, I realized I had to wake up the authentic solar to have the balance. Now, many women I know have to work up the authentic lunar.
Oh, okay.
Even though the belief is...
For me, it's solar
land. Well, but for everybody's individual. That's what's so wonderful.
Yeah.
And that at the quantum level, it's the wave and the particle, that if you look for a wave, you find a wave. If you look for a particle, you find a particle. And to be able to psychologically, through empathy, find your solar side and your lunar side means you get to live the fullness of being human, rather than the stuckness of cultural gender.
I got you. Now, you asked me to read again this, or to talk about again this quote, this phrase, which I'm so happy that I picked, because, you know, you never know. Your book is so special, and you wrote it, and you know it more than anybody. And when I had to pick a phrase, it was really hard for me because all of them had an impact in me, I would like to say. And I'm going to read this again because it's so intense and deep what you know, Howard put here, stated here. It is as simple as recognizing that men and women are both warriors and lovers by nature's design, not by cultural gender labels. We are primarily cellular systems that are part of nature's web of living systems that are influenced by nature's forces like the sun, moon, and the cosmos. That's the essence of the book, if you guys are interested in reading out. My next question is, and I think it's going to be the last one because we have like probably 8 minutes. Solar traits are expressed when one is direct, logical, and goal-directed, while lunar traits show up as emotion, intuition, and visioning. Denying both sexes their dual influence deprives each the richer, more creative, an integrated life that each one of us deserves and sets the stage for emotional and psychological imbalances ranging from personal dissatisfaction to serious depression and dysfunction. How can a person detect his or her lack of lunar or solar influences?
Well, I think the most important, the 6 steps in the last chapter, if one isn't even interested in the book, read the 6 steps. It's in 2 or 3 pages. I'll go through them again. Notice something negative, step 1. Ask yourself what the expectation is that goes with it, step 2. Turn it into an image, step 3. Burn it, pop it in a balloon, and right away grab the first thing that comes up. Don't discount it. Most people say, well, it's nothing or it's that. Grab the first thing that comes up, which is your intuition, which is the wisdom of the wholeness of being. That's step 4. Step 5 is do something with it. Write it down, say it out loud, share it, paint it, dance it, listen to music, think about it, or choose not to do something about it. It's an action principle. Step 6 is do almost anything you can not to buy into inflated expectations.
Yeah, but my let me see. Yeah. Probably I didn't rephrase the question well. When I say, how can a person detect his or her lack of lunar or solar influence? What I mean is, like, what if a person is very negative and he's not aware if he's negative? And he lives a life in denial?
Well, if you're in denial, you usually your lover or somebody will tell you the truth. And to come out of denial is the first step. So you have to be willing to surrender your belief system to listen to another.
But what if that person thinks he's right or she's right?
Well, then they're going to stay stuck. They're just going to stay in the paradigm they're in, and it's going to be very hard to get out of it because denial is an unconscious defense mechanism. So if somebody says...
Is it something that you were raised with, that
yeah,
you were trained?
You were programmed. Probably you needed to protect yourself because those parts of being authentic lunar, for example, mm-hmm. growing up as a man were not okay. So you had to deny him and repress him and deny it. And that if it's an unconscious defense mechanism. And if you keep denying in the conscious mind something that's living in the unconscious is 98% of the instrument. 20 million bits of information go on unconsciously. 20 bits go on consciously.
Nothing. It's like ridiculous.
If you want to get those 20 million bits of information a second, one has to come out of denial. If you don't come out of denial, the conscious mind is definitely a strong, powerful instrument that's been highly developed. It's the greatness of being a modern person is to have a solar mind. It's the inflated solar. And if one stays in their self-centered beliefs, because that's what denial is a self-centered belief, if I don't listen to another or see what I call reflective consciousness, how to see something other than my expectations or idealizations, I'm going to be in denial, and I'll pay the price. If you don't do it psychologically,
what is to pay the price?
It'll show up as a body symptom usually.
And if it doesn't, because I know people that are on denial, they're better than me, okay? Yeah. Let me tell you. Yeah. They don't even go to the dentist for what it's worth.
Well, until their teeth fall out.
Do you think that at some point in their lives they will catch them?
Age is the equalizer. I've been around long enough and have worked with people over time to see that you don't get away with being inflated.
That's what I was going to tell you. Can you just live this life in denial and nothing happens to you?
No, you can die at 40 or 50 or 60. Or get many diseases, because if you don't work it out psychologically, it shows up in the body. That's just the reality.
But could it be that it doesn't show up in the body and you just have a normal life? Or it always shows up?
If whatever a normal life is.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. No. And, a lot of people are not into being conscious. No judgment. Everybody can have the individuated life that they choose or not.
Hmm. I got you.
It's a conscious choice to come out of denial or not.
It is. It really is.
I'm terrified to be in denial.
No, yeah, well, of course. It takes a lot of courage.
I had some big wake-up calls this weekend about something I was in denial about, and I had to really listen with my heart to something that was hard to hear. I listened, and I made a change, and I'm going to make a deep change. And if I wouldn't have heard it, if I would have kept denying it and said, well, it's not really true, it's really this way, I'd still be in denial about a core issue. And the psyche is interesting because if you don't work out the last thing, you usually don't get the next thing. If you work out the last thing, you usually get the next. And if you work that one out, you get the next. And then you're a creative evolutionary dynamic.
Okay, I have to have you again in my show. Can we do this again?
Be my joyful pleasure.
Oh, I'd love to listen to you. And one more time, just for the people that catch the show a little bit late, you can always watch it another time because it's on the web. This is a great seminar, which I want to go. How to produce joy. I mean, a lot of people would benefit out of this. If you're not in denial, it's free admission.
It's free. It's actually about the myth of love and soul, the myth of Eros and Psyche.
Good.
But please call, because there's limited space at the Zen Center, and there may be a few people or there may be a lot. And
okay.
I totally welcome anybody that would like to come, and there'll be space, but there's a phone number on there.
Right. I will give it right now. It's 415-425-6515. A lot of fives there. Let me say this again. 415-425-6515. They can check your web too.
Yeah,
which is
my website. It's on the website, solarlunar.com. Look at some of the articles, some of the things that are not obvious. There's a great 6-minute video mm-hmm. called The Embrace of the Moon. Again, if you look at the 6 steps in the book, look at the Embrace of the Moon video. In 10 minutes, you can have a doorway to liberation.
Beautiful. Howard, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
One minute away from leaving here. I really enjoyed this interview. I think that there's a lot to do in this planet and this world. Mm-hmm. And having people like you speaking about it and just, detecting all the little things that people, mm-hmm. our habits, and we're creatures of habits. We're programmed. Mm-hmm. We have a zillion programs, as you said, mm-hmm. unconsciousness and things that we don't realize. It's like, people like you that come to my show, they just bring all this stuff and like face people with reality, although they want to listen or not. That's their choice.
Well, thanks for your honor of making this show possible to share this type of information. It's not easy to find places to share.
I know.